overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Thank you so much. It's the perfect song for this Sunday morning. It's kind of a challenge for me to be up here. So I ask that you hold me in that space so I can honor this experience that is uncomfortable at best. And I'm so glad that you sang about the soul, because I was sitting up there in intensive care in the emergency room last night questioning, has Paul's soul left his body yet? Because the body is kept alive. And yet I'm so into clinging only to the truth, because the truth sets us free, that we are an eternal soul. And when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And so I know that Paul is fine. He had a beautiful day, as Jody reminded you. And it's so funny, I was reading my little book, The Gardener, which is like a little gospel to me. And near the end of the book, this mystic gardener, a gardener and a mystic sees things in wholes. They don't see things in parts. And so a strange sort of way, the character in this little book, I kind of resemble him. He speaks to plants. He listens to trees. They're all part of his ancestry, his family. And at the end of the book, the gardener dies. But he doesn't die a sad death. He falls over in the garden. And instead of cursing the twig or the root that tripped him up, he falls onto the Mother Earth and he says, ah, there you were, Mother, holding me all the time. And you're holding me now. And Paul fell yesterday when he had the heart attack. And I was told that he was surrounded by leaves lying on Mother Earth. And he was held by the Mother, truly. And after I had the heart attack and I was a little disoriented, you know, and I had a little bit of that survival guilt. Why did I live, you know? Why, of all people, did I not? Because I had the Widowmaker. And the first thing I heard when I came out of the procedure, the nurse said, you shouldn't be here, you should be gone. But I made it. But I was struggling with surviving. And so a friend told me to go lie on the earth. And the earth was the most grounding experience. So to know that Paul was on the earth, held by the Mother, was good for my heart. And so this month I'm speaking on a discourse of love. And usually in the Science of Mind, the CSL churches all over the country, they do the four basic principles, the thing itself, the way it works, what it does, and how to use it. And I said, why don't we, since I'm doing a class on the simpler way, why don't we really get simple with Science of Mind and call it Science of Mind and Heart and put them two together, put the head and the heart together so we don't separate them, and then have a new operating system. So the thing itself is love. And the way it works through our consciousness. When we do these revealing services, I'm so amazed at the satsang that's created in that circle, how we all meet in that heart space. And we don't put on the mask and try to be something or control anything, but rather we get rather vulnerable and real. And the soul that we dive into, by its very nature, is vulnerable. It's not guarded. So the way it works through our heart, it works through our mind. And what it does, it sets us free. It sets us free of our own self-inflicted nonsense, which is the acronym for sin, for our unskillful patterns in life. And then we take responsibility, and I love responsibility for my own buttons, really giving me a great gift as the sound goes in and out. But that's great, because that's one of my buttons, and the sound system always reminds me. It gives me exactly what I need so that I don't have to resist it. And then the way it works, what it does, and how to use. is particularly soulful. The sun. No, I better not take it off. I'll just leave this thing on my head that feels like a. But I'm getting better. I'm getting better. So Paul Fulford was in our candlelight service this year, and he was the one that opened it all up. And he shared as a little boy growing up that he had a resonance with a man named Albert Einstein. And Paul is a brilliant mind, a physicist, an engineer, but he also had this huge heart. You know, we teach by example. And so the very first Sunday of the month, the title of the talk was The Science of Love. You know, we teach the science of mind. Could we open to the science of love? And this little book is just called Love, and it's filled with essays of some of the greatest minds, Robert Adams, you name it, they're in here. And they talk about the gene of love, the oxytocin, that whenever we smile at another, oxytocin, we feel that connection. That's why the four-leggeds are so powerful, because they activate that oxytocin in life. I you know, Jody Rutenberg is our practitioner, and I was thinking, as a practitioner, you're supposed to, everything goes on in the mind of the one doing the prayer, and you're not supposed to touch your clients. That's a verboten thing. And, you know, I touch everybody in every. And so I would say that science of mind had it wrong, and the science of love, when Jody came over to our house, the night that Bert collapsed, the night that I thought he was leaving his body, he couldn't move. And Jody threw herself on top of him. She put her head on top of Bert's head. And she spoke the language of love to him. And she said, what a privilege it is to have you in my life. And she was just kissing on him and hugging him. And she wasn't creating some fakakta idea in her mind that she was projecting onto him. She was just loving him and holding him. And she did make a request. She says, can you just stick around for my birthday, which was January 1st. And this was like the 23rd of December. So we were asking him to basically hang around for a week while David and Trey go up to Boston and Al stays with a dying dog. And you know what? He rallied. He rallied because the power of love was so strong. So I don't discount the power of love. And Paul may wake up. You know, he may. And Jane, there's so much love in that hospital room. And so here's for Paul. I thought I'd resurrect this because he loved it so much. Albert Einstein wrote letters to his daughter only to be published posthumously 20 years after he made his transition. And they were to his daughter, Liesel. And in 1980, Liesel, the daughter of Albert Einstein, donated 1,400 letters written by her father where he was explaining the truth of what things are. And he says, I ask you, to his daughter, to guard the letters as long as necessary, years, decades, until society has advanced enough to accept what I'm going to explain to you. And he says, there is an extremely powerful force that so far science has not found a formal explanation to. It is a force that includes and governs all others and is even behind any phenomenon operating in the universe and has not yet been identified by humanity. And this universal force, he said, is L-O-V-E in all capital letters. Wow. Boy, that really speaks highly of a scientist. The force in the universe is love. And then he says, when scientists looked for a unified theory of the universe, they forgot the most important unseen force. Love is light. That enlightens those who give and who receive it. Who give and receive it. We talked about giving and receiving in the revealing service. It's really a being it, because you give what you are.
And giving and receiving are the same side of the same. So you can't give what you can't receive. It's a lesson that I'm learning more and more in life. I can't give what I haven't received. And so when we can open to receive the love that is everywhere offering itself, from the leaves that Paul fell in yesterday, from the tree that we sit under, from a smile of a friend, when we receive it, then we can circulate it. And that's the law of abundance. For those of you who want to understand how it is, it's a flow. And so Einstein goes on to say, love is light. And he said, love is gravity, because it makes some people feel that they're attracted to others. Ooh, law of attraction. Love is power, because it multiplies the best that we have and allows humanity not to be extinguished in their blind selfishness. He said, love unfolds and love reveals. Now, to just play with those verbs, love unfolds itself. It takes up residence in its creation. What you and I are is love itself, and it flowers, it unfolds itself, it reveals itself. Wow, that's a different kind of spirituality, Mike, isn't it? It's a deeper kind of, can we let this love reveal itself through its creation, which is you and me? That's why I think the center is so powerful. And then he says, for love we live, and for love we die. Love is God, and God is love. Einstein says this. And he says, this force explains everything, and it gives meaning to life. This is the variable that we have ignored for way too long. Maybe because we are afraid of love, because it's the only energy in the universe that man has not learned to drive with his will. You can't control it. You can't manipulate it. You can't possess it, because it's what you are. And it wants to flower in our hearts. And you know what that requires? That requires a vulnerability. It doesn't require that we always feel safe, that we feel guarded and protected. I discovered that this Wednesday night at our generational healing. He says, to give visibility to this love, I made a simple substitution in my most famous equation. This, who can tell me what his famous equation is? E equals mc squared. So we're changing it right now. Thank you, Albert. If instead of E equals mc squared, we accept that the energy to heal the world can be obtained only through love, multiplied by the speed of light squared. And then we arrive at the conclusion that love is the most powerful force there is, because it has no limits. And after the failure of humanity in the use and control of those other forces of the universe that have turned against us, it is urgent more than ever that we nourish ourselves with another kind of energy. And if we want our species to survive, because there is an existential imperative right now, we have to spiritually evolve as much as we have scientifically evolved. If we are to survive, if we are to find meaning in life, if we want to save the world and every sentient being that inhabits it, a sentient being is someone that has feelings. And let me tell you, every animal, every plant has feelings. They're all sentient beings. It is not just the human species. And every sentient being that inhabits it, love is the one and only answer. And perhaps we're not ready to make the bomb of love. Ooh, I like that, the bomb of love. A device powerful enough to entirely destroy the hatred on the planet, the selfishness, the greed that is devastating our planet. However, each individual, this is for you, Paul, carries within them a small but powerful generator of love whose energy is waiting to be released. And when we learn to give and receive this universal energy, dear Liesl, his daughter, we will have affirmed that love has conquered all and is able to transcend everything and anything, because love is the quintessence of life itself. With love, your father, Albert Einstein. Wow, I had to wait 20 years until we evolved to a place we could hear that. Are we able to hear it now, I wonder? Are we able to hear that we are ambassadors of love, to offer that love to the world that so desperately needs it? I believe we are. The second week, I spoke about, what did I speak about the second week? Doing little things with great love. That was last week. That was Mother Teresa that said that. There are no great acts of love. She said there are only little acts done with great love. Last Sunday, when I came to the center, the winds had blown over the pine tree that was in that big cement container, a pine tree that planted herself there maybe 10 years ago. And I remember Gigi was going to liberate it from its container. I saw her pulling on it one Sunday, but he didn't want to leave, because he had put its root down through the cement container and into the asphalt, and he was growing literally through the miracle of life itself. But of course, the wind blew him over, and there he was lying, and I was waiting for some strong young man to come and help me hoist it up. But Paul Fulford, came to church at 8 o'clock, and he lifted that thing up and put it back in place. I said, Paul, you had the strength to do that? Little acts done with great love. So I was going to show my class a video of Richard Rohr for the new class, and I couldn't get the computer to work. And so my beloved assistant, Raul, sat there and sat there and sat there. And he was on the phone with Paul Fulford. And for an hour, Paul guided him to no avail. And we moved the class in here and watched it in the room. The next morning, Wednesday morning, I came to the center early with my pups. And there was Paul Fulford at 7:30 sitting at the computer. And for 3 hours, he sat there trying to get it updated so we could watch a Richard Rohr video. And we couldn't get it. But as we sat there speaking, Paul was reflecting on his childhood, on his father's transition. He was telling me this most intimate story of his mother when she was 98, before she made her transition. Paul said, at my mother's deathbed, she said, oh, there are your two uncles and my horse coming to get me. And shortly after that, she left. And Paul and I laughed and we said, I wonder who comes for us when we're ready to make our transition. And we laughed about our four-leggeds. You know, girl dog's going to be there, right there, Greg. And his dog, Bear, made his transition. And I said Baby Speck would be there. And we were having this sweet, intimate conversation about life and death. And when the students all arrived for the class, we still couldn't get the TV to work. So we moved into here. And I said, Paul, would you mind sticking around and helping me with the technical stuff? Because Raul knows I can screw things up really easily with the technical stuff. So we sat there for a little 30-minute video of Richard Rohr talking about, on Oprah's Super Soul Saturday, how he had had a heart attack at age 76. I think Paul was either 75 or 76. And Oprah, in her well-meaningness, asked Richard Rohr, I don't want to sound cliched, but did it impact you in any way? And he said, well, to be in my humble way, he said, to be still alive is such a grace-filled realization. And he said, what I did learn, Oprah, was how sacred and fragile life is. And so Paul's listening to that with all of us, and we're having this deep experience of our mortality. And I know when I came back from the heart attack, it's like every day I wake up. You said you do your inventory, Mike. Every day I wake up and I said, oh my God, I've got another day on this planet, another day to love, another day to celebrate, you know, just the simple little things, and to do those things with great love. When I was sitting there last night with Pam at Paul's bedside, Pam said, you've been in the garden, because I had dirt under all my fingernails, and that's where my soul connects to the earth. I was going to harvest 50 to 100 camellia blossoms that had covered the big camellia in the backyard. Breathtakingly beautiful, but I couldn't do it this morning because I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. So there's a camellia out there waiting for you somewhere, and someday it'll get to you, but not right now. Doing little things with great love. Okay, and today I'm speaking on whatever arises, love that. And I was thinking about that as I was sitting in the hospital. How can I love what is arising? This is a beautiful book that Greg Ledford sent a picture of it to me. And he said that his beautiful friend Molly said, this is her Bible. And I was going to teach it, but I'm already so loving anyway. I thought I'll just share a little bit of this. This is Matt Kahn. He says, you are allowing the grace of love to transform how you relate to a lifetime of experience. That one sentence changed my life. He said, could we allow the grace of love to transform how we relate to the experiences of life? Life is going to give you some pretty hellish experiences. Could we open to the grace of love and let it guide us through that? And that's why we need each other. Pam and I were talking about we're here to walk each other home. And I reminded, he talks about Plato in this, and Plato said, we're born whole, but we need each other to be complete. So I need the flowers to make me complete, and I need the otters in my life, and I need the old trees, and I needed Paul Fulford, who was like one of the most beautiful, he was like the brother that I never had. And he says, when rooted in your heart, human reactions contain an essential spiritual role, both in your personal journey and throughout the evolution of humanity. One simple, I love you. At the right time, the perfection of divine will offers you opportunities to accelerate your healing through your willingness to embrace your heart like a child in pain. You know, one of my vivid memories as a little boy growing up in a kind of dysfunctional family was my grandmother, who was the embodiment of love. And she would pick me up and hold me in those, she was a Scandinavian woman, huge, you know, and she would hold me in her arms, and I would hold on to her huge you-know-whats as a little boy, because I wasn't ever breastfed, and I would hold on to my grandmother, and she would kiss me and make the boo-boo better. I mean, I just remember that holding space that she created for that little boy. No matter how the child in your heart is feeling, and trust me, there are exiled parts that we all have. I've discovered more and more that my whole childhood was exiled and stuffed inside me. And when we do those generational healings, it's transformational for me. This last Wednesday was probably the most powerful. And here I was to assist another in their generational healing, and I was the one that reaped the consequence or the benefit. I don't even know what the word is. So no matter how that child in your heart is feeling, whether they're fearful, they're agitated, they're sad, they're grieving, they feel guilty, they feel jealous, angry, hateful, or hurt, when returning to love becomes your primary response, then each emotion acts as an invitation into a more spiritually aligned existence. So when that little child is no longer told to behave and be a man, he's allowed to be vulnerable, he's allowed to be sad, and he's allowed to be held by the love that we are. And at a certain stage, we have to be the one to embrace that part of ourselves. I mean, my little boy was always looking for someone to hug me, and then I heard the voice within me, I have to hug me. I have to be the one to love me. So he says this, finally. He says, loving what arises helps you unearth a greater cosmic picture, even in the most subtle and uneventful moments of your life. Even in those simple little moments where maybe you don't think you're worthy, just a simple act of I love you is just so powerful for that little kid within. And he says, with every step forward along a heart-centered path, you are able to clear away the confusion by acknowledging the most pivotal reason that anything emerges to the forefront of your life. If it arises, it comes to be met, not to be shamed, not to be exiled again. It's arising, and we see this in our classes all the time, especially in satsang, how these things arise to be met and to be held with love. So beyond the outdated beliefs that your thoughts create your reality, that's the science of mind dictum, he said it's outdated, or that they are karmic punishments for some past indiscretion, your karma will get you if you don't walk out. I saw a bumper sticker the other day. It said, my dharma has run over my karma. Yeah, it's beyond the outdated beliefs of your thoughts are creating your reality, or you're karmically being punished from your past indiscretions. Each emotional surge invites you, rather, to welcome in yourself that which has been exiled and to face it, acknowledge it, and honor it in another way. And in the most honest and intimate way, then you are able to resolve every conflict, not by exiling it, not by making it wrong, but by loving that part of you that's coming up. Yeah, so Wednesday night, let me share what happened. This young man decided that he wanted to heal his relationship with his brother, his older brother. I had an older brother. My brother abused me. His brother was abusive. He had a father that was detached, that really did not know how to love his sons. My father never once held me or said, I love you. So he picks me to play the father. And when I stood up in that constellation, I found myself as my father just crossing my arms and holding my heart inside, because my father didn't know how to love, and how could he give what he didn't have? And so when the person that was playing, the son number one and son number two, I realized the father in me didn't know how to love them, the father that I was playing. And it was as if I had an armor around myself. And then Glory G, in her wisdom, picked someone to play the grandfather, my father, in this constellation. And I realized he didn't know how to love his son, which was me in that scenario. And there I was, physically experiencing my own generational healing as my father, and all I had was compassion for him. Because I remember growing up, I wanted so desperately to be held, and he couldn't give what he didn't have to give. And there was one stage, Glory G asked the grandfather to hug his son, meaning my father was to hug me. And I could feel the absolute revulsion when he put his arms around me, that he did not It was, and I realized it was that which was coming up that wanted to be loved. It was my little boy in the Father who wanted to be loved by his Father. And Terry appreciates this because I fell apart. And she says, now maybe my Father will fall apart. You know, I don't know how we connect these, but I'm, you know, I hope you all fall apart at some stage, because it was very cathartic for the little boy that was in the Father that didn't know how to love. And these things are phenomenal, how they, I know, that how they break us open. Glory G always says these things are freaking amazing, because you never know how they're going to work, but they work the way they work, so that that essence self, and when one person embraces, and the next morning I was having a technical challenge Thursday morning, so I called Paul Fulford on the phone. He was like my guardian angel in every way. And I shared with him about the generational healing, because he had a similar scenario with his own dad, and how we got to share that deep, intimate connection, you know, that they're here for us. And I truly felt the love of my Father, maybe for the first time last Wednesday night, when he asked for my forgiveness, and I received it. It was, and then Seamus so beautifully observed. He said, when you put the armor around you to protect you, you think it's protecting you, but it literally hurts as it on the inside. It's as if it's really holding the love in. It's keeping you from experiencing the vulnerability that's necessary for the soul to flower. So it's about taking the wall down around the heart, and even if it means you're going to be vulnerable, let yourself be vulnerable, because there's always someone or something that will embrace you. I found it to be a rock. I found it to be a tree. I found it in your eyes and in your embrace, and that all we're here to do is to love one another and love each other until we get home. So I got up this morning, and I didn't know what to do because of Paul, and so I pulled out the gardener. And at the end of the beautiful story, the gardener makes his transition in a kind of a magical way. And so I thought this would be a nice tribute to Paul. Here's the gardener at the end of his life. And he says, on a peaceful late afternoon, he heard his steps, light and faint, like a whisper of a breeze in the branches and among the leaves of the holly tree. And he saw it appear, delicate and proud, beautiful and pure, in the soft whiteness of its skin. The unicorn has come for him. Not the two brothers and the horse, but the unicorn came for the gardener. And the gardener exclaimed in a low voice, opening his eyes in astonishment before this magnificent mystery. Meekly, the beautiful animal approached him, and between tears of joy, the gardener stroked its velvety mane. You all know what it is. It's a mythical animal that's not supposed to exist. And he understood that, and the unicorn opened the gates of the mystery to the gardener, and it carried him gently into the kingdom of light from whence he came. It came to bring him home. We need each other. And from that day, he understood the language of the birds and the conversation with the trees in the moonlight and the stories that the water was telling him in the Cascades. And he understood that the whole earth was his garden, the beloved present that life had given him from the eternal night of his conception and on the shores of time. And he knew that the stars were shining for him, and that the sun blazed for him, and that the eternal had kept a corner for him in the immediate brilliance of its blinding light, shining from the depths within his own being. He was having a direct experience of that which was never born, that which will never die. And his illuminated soul swelled with life. And he cried out to the sun and to the moon, to life and death, among tears of joy, my dream has finished. My dream has finished. I am awake. I see with new eyes. And so this dream that we all live, this apparent thing that has a beginning and has an end, it's the dream that we all create. And yet there is something that's so much more luminous, that holds us, that contains us, that would have us know that we're more than what we think we are, that we are this love unfolding. So yeah, so let me do a little closing meditation with all these microphones. There is a beautiful gift in just stopping. Just stopping the efforting. Stop the controlling. Stop the need to fix. And in that stopping, there's an opening that can take place. Just opening of the heart. Rumi says, when the window of the heart is open, he says, love can flow from heart to heart. But then he reminded us, if there's no wall between us, what need is there of a window? And so the first thing that comes down is the wall that holds the love in and keeps the love out. The wall falls away so that love can flow from heart to heart, from smile to smile, from touch to touch. Like Jody lying on top of Bert, it was love lying on top of love. And when that happens, the alchemy of love can flow, can unfold itself, can reveal itself, and we are that. And at whatever age we are, when we take down that which is literally our straitjacket, when it falls, when a crack is revealed, then something can emerge that is so sacred. And so I know that that something is emerging for Paul and for Jane, just like it did for our beautiful gardener. It may not come in the form of a unicorn, but it may come in the form of a pet, perhaps, or a horse, or somebody who is now an invisible presence who comes to meet us when we shuffle off this mortal coil. We take down the mask and the costume and the dream and that which is eternal, that radiant soul of our being returns home. There's a wonderful saying that says, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. The truth is that we're spiritual beings, a spirit that was never born and never dies. And when we know it for ourselves, we can know it for other, because there really is no other. But we can know that all life is this beautiful light and love. And the Sufis say, when we're born, we come with that light and that love. And when we leave this plane of action, we take the light with us, but we leave the love behind. And so I invite you now to feel the love that has been deposited in your heart. Yesterday was my mother's birthday. She would have been 99. I talk to her all the time because I know that she's there. She's holding me just like she did when I was a little boy. Not in her arms, but she's holding me in her heart, or rather I am holding her in my heart, knowing that she gave me the gift of life. And she's still giving me that gift. And so as we wake up to the truth of what we are, and as we grow up by taking responsibility for everything in life, and as we say, I love you, to the buttons that we find in ourselves, to the button pushers that show up in our life, as we follow the example of Jesus, who said just to love one another as I have loved you, to not judge, because our judgments will be the very place that we are judged, and to take out the beam in our eye, so that we can see clearly now. So we take out that obstruction that's clouding our perception, and we invite the wisdom of this true nature to unveil itself right there at the depths of our being. And if it means that we have to meet the generations, when we do, we heal deeply, not only ourselves, but those who've gone before. So thank you, Dad. Thank you, Grandpa, for showing me the love that I had hidden so long. And thank all of you for being a part of this living organism that we call CSL here, because you all are an aspect of myself. It's with so much gratitude for every tear, for every crack in the armor, for every touch of the beloved, and for every miracle that happens just by the power of love. I'm in awe of how this whole thing operates. In that place of awe and reverence, we trust and allow, we surrender, and we invite and allow the grace of love to transform the way we respond to the experiences of life, then everything is here for us. Everything is a blessing, and we welcome it. This is the realization of a jubilant and beholden heart. With gratitude, take a deep breath. Give a sigh for the divine. And know that you have arrived in that field of love where there is only one, and we are that one. And so it is. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.